So, just to recap the major points from yesterday, to try to give it some context. So, we talked about the question of how do we perceive the concept of Shechita? Is it its own mitzvah? Is it something else? Is it something less, something more? And we saw a couple of possibilities. Some Rishonim who counted it as a mitzvah, others who didn't, and maybe that's because they see it either as a lava b'michal aseh, or they see it as maybe even less than that, as something that's just there to allow something, but it doesn't actually have its own inherent significance. And we talked about the question of whether the mitzvah is addressed to the one eating or the one shechting, if it's not necessarily the same. And we mentioned how the objection was raised that if it's about the shochet, so why shouldn't we say that anybody who kills an animal should have to follow these rules? And not necessarily about eating. So that we're going to try to address a little bit today also. And we talked about the question of the bracha. Where exactly does the bracha fit in? Everyone agrees there is a bracha, although the bracha has a different nusach to it. And that Rambam mentions that even according to him, there's still a difference between shechita and other mitzvahs. So it's clearly not in the same sense of obligation, and that's why it's al instead of le. And the Rambam uses it as an example of an obligatory mitzvah, tzitzis. And we spent some time figuring that out because tzitzis would seem to also be conditional. So we could say you only have to put on tzitzis if you want to wear a four-cornered garment. Why is that different than you only have to shecht if you want to eat meat? And we went through a little bit what the possible differences might be. And we also talked about the question of whether the bracha on shechita, is it a brachas hamitzvah, as it sounds like, or is it perhaps something else, maybe a brachas hashavach, and that's how some interpret the Rush. The Rush distinguishes between brachas erusin, which he sees as a brachas hashavach, and brachas shechita, but those distinctions might just be to explain the differences in language, but maybe he really sees them as similar, and that could explain some things as well. Gilad.
Is there any relevance?
Sorry?
Is there any relevance to means one grammar?
So let's think about that for a second. Is there any relevance? So if, because tzitzis is one grammar, so therefore does that show you that it's less obligatory?
I would think.
You know, it's interesting, just to very quickly, because it's not really our topic, but the question of tzitzis is a little bit mysterious because the fact that it's a zman grama doesn't necessarily make it less obligatory, because there are other mitzvos that are zman grama and have a more straightforward kind of obligatory structure to them. So it's not really indicated that those two are related to each other, but it is interesting that Rabbi Yosef Engel, I think it's the first time this year I'm mentioning him, but the name will come up a lot, just it always does. So Rabbi Yosef Engel, in a Sefer Asvin Daraisa, we spoke about this when we spoke about Sukkah, and maybe we'll come back to the Sukkah time, but Rav Yosef Engel suggests, when he talks about whether it makes sense for a woman to voluntarily wear tzitzis, because since we know that women can volunteer to do mitzvot that they're patur from, and according to the Ashkenazi Rishonim, Rabbeinu Tam, they can make a bracha also, so they can have matzah and make a bracha, and they can take a lulav and make a bracha, etc. So what about putting on tzitzis? So he thought, to Yosef Engel, that that davka makes no sense, because the fact that it's conditional indicates that it's not there for a fully positive purpose, but it's there to fix something. And if you're not, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. If you're not missing that, so then there's no value at all to volunteering it. And that it's not like matzah or lulav where we say, okay, this is a good thing to do, so even if you're not obligated to do it, you should maybe still do it. Here we're saying, no, this is just if you're in this situation, you need to fix it this way. So if you don't need to fix it, then you don't need to fix it, which is an interesting perspective. It's not the only way to see things.
So it helped.
But in this case, it kind of brings these two points together, right? That in general, it wouldn't say there's necessarily a linkage between mitzvah, seisha, zman, grama, and the conditional aspect. But it happens to be, when it comes to tzitzis, the p'tur of women and the fact that it's tied into a certain condition, Rav Yosef Engel does happen to draw that connection. Now, that's important for us also, so actually thank you for bringing it up, because it helps us to flesh out that if we're trying to figure out whether we count something as a mitzvah or not, or something less, it seems like we have a couple of categories. And maybe they're not so firm and absolute. We have to see. That when you have a chiyuv, clear obligatory mitzvah, so it seems like the Torah is telling you, this is something we want you to do. This is something that has religious value and religious necessity, and therefore you should do it. When it comes to, let's go to the other extreme for a second, if you want to say that it's just a matir with no mitzvah element at all, so then maybe we're saying that there really is nothing particularly uplifting about this action. It's just that it's necessary in order to allow you to follow whatever path you want to go to. But the action itself doesn't have any inherent religious significance. Let's take those as two extremes. But there's space in the middle. So if you look at something like tzitzis, I would have thought that it sounds like it's a little closer to the first, but not in the same absolute sense. That the Torah is saying that there is a value when engaged in a certain activity to be doing it in a certain way. And that is a positive value that addresses that condition. And it's not phrased as something you must have as part of your life, but it is a positive opportunity within that case, which is why, because we intuit that, we seek out the opportunity. So we get a four-cornered garment because we recognize the Torah is essentially saying that, yeah, you could exist, you could maneuver your life without this, but there is a value to it. So as people who are looking to grow and to maximize our avodas Hashem, we should try to seek that out. Now, Rav Yosef Engel's particular perspective kind of reduces that a little bit, because he's saying it's still only because there's something that needs to be fixed in that situation. But you gotta know if everyone would see it like that. You have to figure out exactly what the message is. But it sounds like if that's true about tzitzis, he's knocking it down a step. Now, he also happens to get into the whole sukkah discussion there. Maybe we'll save that for sukkah's time. But it's an important question to figure out how exactly sukkahs is going to fit into that spectrum. So apparently, certainly from the words of the Rambam, shechita is a step below that. Does it mean it's all the way on the floor? That it's nothing? It's just because you shouldn't eat without it? Also doesn't sound like it, because the Rambam's counting as a mitzvah and has a bracha. So we got to make a space somewhere in between. It's probably relevant to the space. It's probably important to note that the factor that you could have somebody else do it is probably relevant to this category.
This is back to the Iris.
Yeah, which is also probably affected by that. So if shechita, if we have to make our own category, maybe we will, and we're ready to do that if necessary. We'd be bold and uninhibited and ready to create a new category if necessary, but maybe shechita is in a unique category, that it's something that could have been similar to tzitzis, except that something about its nature allows it to be done by someone else. And therefore, it's hard to say that this is something that has religious value for you if, even in the best of circumstances, if it's done by somebody else, it's not going to matter. Now, it's interesting, there is some discussion in Svarim to consider. Do we apply the principle of mitzvah bo yotzer mibishlucho to shechita? The idea that we have mitzvos that could be fulfilled through a shliach, and yet we normally say that it's a hider, it's preferable for you to do it yourself. Does that concept apply at all to shechita?
Yeah, depends now.
It would seem to. It would seem to be affected by this whole issue.
If we say, like we were talking about a little bit yesterday, if it's on the shochet, then mastama, it's better. It's preferable for the shochet to be doing it if it's on the shochet.
But by definition, he's doing it.
Right. But if it's on the eater, then...
You're saying if the mitzvah is on the shochet, then it must be there's a maila to be the shochet.
Right, for sure. And then also, I mean, it's a given. Of course, if the mitzvah is on the shochet, then it's better for him to be doing it. But, I mean, obviously, he's doing it. But if the mitzvah is for you, even if it's a los essay of not eating non-shechted meat, or an essay of eating shechted meat, so do I need to be the one that's shechting it?
That's what I'm asking. So is it, well, you don't need, you clearly don't need to be.
If the mitzvah is on the shochet, then the concept isn't even relevant.
Well, that's why. That's why I first asked.
It's not relevant if it's on the shochet at all.
First, I questioned what you were saying because, like, obviously it is. But then I thought what you were saying after that is that no, but maybe if the mitzvah is on the shochet, then what we're saying is that there's a maila to be the shochet because you're not going to get the mitzvah otherwise, and that maybe there is a maila to do this.
No, I mean that. Yeah, if the mitzvah is on the shochet, then the only way for you to do the mitzvah is to be the shochet.
Right. So therefore, maybe. So is there any value to your choosing shechita? Maybe yes, because you get a mitzvah that you wouldn't otherwise get.
When people say they're going to the Kodesh HaKodesh, do they include?
They should, presumably. So that's one way to look at it. Yeah.
It seems like one of the concerns with them, you know, having like peers towards Mishap or towards doing it, is that they're going to mess it up. So it seems like it's the way you do, like the way it's done, is most important. So whoever knows how to do it the best should be doing it.
So, but that also, so let's break that down, right? So on the one hand, yes, it seems like getting it right is crucial, although we'll see that it's not the only crucial thing. It just is a crucial thing. So you could have just as easily said that means that it's a black and white matir, that it just either is or isn't. It's either acceptable or not acceptable. But even if you want to take it in the other direction and saying, okay, you see from here that you should give it to the best one, so then still, it's maybe more like we've discussed, a policy decision rather than something that's inherent in the mitzvah, saying that the mitzvah, although it's interesting, just once we're talking about mitzvah b'yosin v'shlucho, that whole sugya, why we say that it's better to do the mitzvah through yourself, is a discussion what the reason is. And there are some who suggest, it's not the most likely interpretation, but there are some who suggest, and it's also a policy statement, that if you want something done right, better do it yourself. Better make sure that you're on top of everything. But the truth is, there's a presumption here. We say mitzvah bo yosu mishlucha, we want to know if it applies. Let's ask a more basic question. Is it shlichus? Is there any kind of concept here that the shochet is acting on your behalf? Or on behalf of the eaters? Who was up first? Sam?
I would think it's mitzvah bo yosu mishlucha because it's not really, from what we saw at the beginning of yesterday, it doesn't really seem to be your mitzvah at all. It's like the Shavuot's mitzvah, it's not.
Well, but that was only one opinion that not everyone liked.
You can read in the Rambam that it seems to be.
It sounds like from the Rambam that it's the eater's mitzvah, right? So the language of the Rambam is, when the Rambam says a mitzvah who wants to eat teshach, so it sounds like he's saying it's on the eater, and then the question could come up, would it be better if he did it himself? Halachically, not even just as a matter of policy. Hi.
Generally, if someone is being yishliach for somebody else, he has to be appointed. So
how does that happen here?
Yeah.
You're saying that's a proof. So we can answer that question a couple ways.
Do you need to be yishliach, or if it's for someone else's positive gain?
That gets into a little, let's break that down. So first of all, let's assume that a shliach needs appointment here. So if you want to say, well, that's a proof one way or another, so we could say, all right, we have to answer that question. If we want to say that there is a shlichus involved, so we got to figure out where the shlichus is. Now, maybe there's a kind of umdana here, or maybe the undefined nature of who the eaters are going to be, maybe that makes things a little bit more complicated in terms of the question of the benefit. So there is such a concept as a zachin, that we can act on somebody else's behalf. It's not always the most ideal path, so it's hard to say that's what's really operating here.
is this at all comparable to like a farmer doing shumei maisos?
Oh, so that also gets so there. That's where there's a whole machlokas about whether you can do that without being properly appointed. It makes the kashrus and eretz Yisrael very complicated because the question of mashgiach doing shumei maisos. So there, in that context, this whole question of zochin me'adam comes up. But also, the notion that you're acting on behalf of an undefined group of people, there's going to be a lot of technical problems to the shlichus issue. So the whole question of whether the shochet is really acting on behalf of the eater, it's a tricky question. So where does this bring us? So it brings us to, we want to figure out, is shchita an action that is inherently valuable? Is it an action that's valuable at least together with certain circumstances? Is it an action that we could have said is valuable, but it's got a different format because its nature is that somebody else could be doing it? And maybe also the other things that are thrown into the mix to knock it down a level from tzitzis? Or would we say that it's not even any of that? So all of this presumably connects to the question of what are the tamei ha-mitzvos here? What's the reason for the mitzvah of shechita? And I think what we'll see, clearly to some extent we're theorizing, in general with tamei ha-mitzvos that's usually the case, but there are hints and clues both in the Chumash and in Shas. So let's consider that. What would you say are possible tamei ha-mitzvos connected with shechita? Sam?
Well, we mentioned Perlo yesterday. He says about being compassionate to the animal.
Okay. We mentioned that yesterday from Rav Perlo?
Yeah,
the Yad HaLevi. The Yad HaLevi, right, mentioning that, right. So the idea of compassion and that it's connected to a tsar balei chayim mida is a prevalent one. You find that in a lot of places. You find it in the Sefer HaChinuch, talking about this mitzvah. You find it in the Ramban on Chumash, which I put on today's list. It's a fascinating Ramban. But the Ramban says that the bracha of Shechita is connected to Tzar Balei Chayim. And the Chasam Sofer in a tshuva suggests that what the Ramban is saying is that essentially when we try to figure out, is it a mitzvah, is it not a mitzvah, and how does the bracha impact on this, that when we say Asher Kedishvanu Mitzvosav Etzivanu regarding Shechita, we're saying that he commanded us to have Rachmanis on the animals. And that essentially Shechita is an act of reducing the pain. Minimizing the pain.
Not mean is that the Chasam Sofer wouldn't put it, if he had a Sefer Mitzvot, he wouldn't put it in his own mitzvot. It falls under the umbrella of Tzar Balei Chayim.
Maybe, although there you can get into some interesting questions because, you know, it could be that we have values that are expressed one place in the Torah, and then we have other mitzvot which exist on their own, even though they're also manifestations of that value. So, for example, is a mitzvah and a klal. And we have other mitzvos which represent the ideal of Yahav Tlarecha Kamocha, even though they're still counted as their own mitzvos. Levi?
If the sole reason for Shechita was just Tzar Balei Chayim, mm-hmm. then one would have to switch to a, I guess, more painless way of killing the animal if one were to find one.
So
I don't know if that's the only...
Okay, so your concern that it's not the sole mitzvah is well taken. But, in general, we have to figure out what to do with that, because the issue of what is the most painless way is a current debate, a debate probably for the past 100 years at least, but certainly relevant now, and has been relevant for a good period of time, about whether shechita is the most humane way, or are there other ways that would be preferable. Are those ways acceptable to halacha? And clearly only shechita is acceptable to halacha, but the question of stunning animals beforehand, certain other steps, how does that fit in? We'll probably get to that in a different context at some point. So that's a raging debate. To what extent is Shechita the absolute most painless way? However, it would be hard for us to make an assessment on that that would lead to changing, even though Misvari could hear it. But we get into the whole problem of Darshina and time to the Kra, and when we're talking about an absolute value, an absolute mitzvah with clear gedarim, it's going to be very hard to say that we should read into it the time of the Kra. But you're right also to call attention to even the way you phrase the question, if it's the sole reason. So it probably isn't the sole reason, it's probably a part of the whole concept, but we have to figure out what kind of implications that does have. So who's up first? All right.
What about the Ahali video we saw yesterday, that we don't necessarily have a fee of the kill?
Okay, so what do you think? So I think there's an approach to that, but we'll come back to that. We have to put a few more steps on the table first. But I think that that is the idea that Tsar Bali Chaim is involved is a very prevalent concept, both in the Rishonim that we mentioned and a few others, and you'll find it all over the place, and it's one that we certainly can relate to. Rabbi Ephraim Meth, who was in the Kol here a number of years ago, so he wrote a Sefer on Chulin, you can find in the library, called Shashue Ephraim. So there he has a chapter, where he highlights that the theme of avoiding cruelty, of avoiding achzarius, is one that you find in those Makoros we mentioned, but also he thinks that it's a concept that you find throughout Halacha Shechita, and he brings a few other examples. So one example he mentions to go in one direction, he talks about not shechting with your fingernail. And there he explains, besides the fact that they're pretty scary fingernails and it's not a good way to walk around, but this is that essentially makes the person into a killing machine. And that has an impact on your achzarius, on your cruelty, that is not a positive one.
But even though it was done kohanim?
Yes, that's an interesting question, where malika and things like that should fit in. That's worth considering. We'll set that aside for a second. But he also then points to other halachos, which kind of go in the opposite direction, because on the one hand, you don't want yourself to be the robotic killer, but on the other hand, you also don't want to be too far removed. And he goes on to explain that other psulim of shechita, he thinks, kind of go in the other direction, that if you don't have a sense that you are killing at all, and God willing, one of the more interesting sugyas we'll get into in this parak is the sugya of maisa and grama, which impacts all kinds of areas of halacha. It's the major first parak of chulin sugya, when we require something to be done directly and not indirectly and the like. So the idea there suggests that we shouldn't allow ourselves to hide from the fact that we're killing an animal here. That on the one hand, you don't want to be too involved in the killing, and the other hand, you don't want to be too separated from it. That last part's a little more difficult, though, because if you want to say the mitzvah is on the shochet, okay, so then you can say it's regulated that way. But we, perhaps to our detriment, we are able to live in a context where we totally are isolated from all the gore, and as the expression goes, we don't see how the hot dogs are made. So if the shechita is supposed to address the consumer, it's an interesting question how much that is going to have an impact. Should also throw in that Sefer HaChinuch and others also point to the fact that we also know that we have an Isser in the Torah of eating blood, and that also perhaps has overlapping themes to it. But one way or another, it's a clear prohibition to eat blood. And a part of the theme of Shechita is to make sure that as much of the blood is taken out of the animal as possible. So the simanim, davka, where they are located, and the impact of those simanim is going to be maximal letting out of the blood, and that is clearly a part of the process here, a part of the kaveda. Again, that might be a related idea, might be a separate idea or an additional idea, but the fact that shechita is where it is connected to that also. Hi.
The Ramban disagreed with that.
How so?
Well, he said in the parish and clinical sign that it's not necessarily about spilling out the blood, it's about getting the simanim.
So it is true also that practically speaking it's even possible to do that
in one. Yeah.
Right. But the idea that the simanim are what they are, so that's one possible understanding, because that's where the maximal blood letting is going to take place. So those are some of the initial aspects of possible reasoning behind shechita. Yeah?
Possible, that's a good example. So shechita's kachin?
Oh, okay. So what about kachin? So as a zecher, is a,
like,
well, so the fact that it might be linked to kachin is certainly possible. So let's consider that. So everything that we've just speculated the past few minutes, maybe you should say, well, why are we doing that? Why don't we look at the Torah and see what it says? So let's do that now. All right, if you got a chance to see, we've kind of pushed this off. We could have made a good argument we should do this the first day, but we wanted to put it into a certain context. So this week's parsha. So you can fulfill part of your Shnayim Mikra now at the same time. So in Perek Yud Beis of Sefer Dvarim, Parshas Re'eh, so the Torah has the following two psukim. And this is really our source, as far as we know, for our whole topic here, our whole issue of Shechita. So what does the Torah actually say? So Yud Beis Chaf, Ki Yarchiv Hashem Elokecha Es Gevulcha, Kasher Dibarlach, V'yamarta Ochla Vasar, Ki Sava Nafshecha Lachal Basar, Cholavas Nafshecha Tochal Basar. So when God is going to give you broader borders, like He's promised, and you've said, I want to eat meat, because you have a desire to eat meat, yeah, and as your desire, you should eat meat. Ki yirchak mimcha hamakom, is next pasuk, asher yivchar Hashem alokecha alashum shmo sham, when you will be far from the place where the korbanos are brought. This indicates the shift into Eretz Yisrael from the Midbar, because originally they were all around the Mishkan, they're right there by the Mizbeach. But once you go in, so then if it's ultimately going to be in Yerushalayim, then you may be nowhere near Yerushalayim, so you're not necessarily in proximity. So, Kiyurchach Mimcha Hamako, Masher Yivcha Hashem Elokecha Lashem Shmo Sham, Vizavachta Bibakarcha Mitzoncha Asher Nasan Hashem Lacha, Kasher Tzivisicha, Vyachalta Bisharecha Bachalavas Nafshecha. There is a lot that we've got to figure out about these two psukim. And the right week to do it, but what exactly is the message of these psukim? So just one point, the idea of v'zavachta mibikarcha u'mitzoncha sh'anas n'asham v'cha kasher tzivisicha. So we often have this quoted with ellipses, quoted without all the words in the middle, but we normally quote it as v'zavachta kasher tzivisicha. So you shall do this, you shall shecht, as you were commanded. Where were you commanded? Where does this commandment come from? What's the reference? So, sorry?
Kachin.
So the Ramban says that the reference is kachin. And that goes to Gilad's point, that perhaps there is a linkage here to the Korbanos. The more well-known explanation, see Rashi here, that Rashi writes that for the Vachta Kasher Tzivizicha, Lamadnu Shiesh Tzivoy Bizvicha. So this teaches us that there was some commandment in Shechting. Heich Yishchot. How exactly should you Shecht? Vehein Hilchah Shechita Shenemru L'moshe Misinai. So the details of Hilchah Shechita were transmitted Har Sinai, and that's being referred to in this pasuk. So working off that interpretation, this pasuk is one of the most frequently cited ideas or sources for the concept of Torah Sheba'al Peh, right? The idea that not everything that we have Nisinai is included in the text of the Chumash. So it's often referred to, this is one of the most overt indications of that. Oh, remember, when I commanded you to shach, that's what you should do. So, where is it? All right. Was there Mesina? All right.
Sorry, would you say to the Ramban or Ramban?
So the Ramban in Chumash connects it to Kajim.
You say it was Perish Shas, that you told us to look at that. Moshe kind of received the details of like the Simonim and everything like that on Har Sinai as well.
Right, so the details of the rules,
right.
That's clearly Halachah Moshe Mesina. But the idea that there's a mitzvah to shach,
okay,
per se, so how do we know that? So one way or another, this is going to require Torah Sheba'al Peh, and that's itself interesting. But what exactly it means, we have to figure out. And the idea that it has some connection to Kodshim is an interesting one. And it's also important to note that if you say there's Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai here, so to say the whole mitzvah was Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai, and now we're just referring to it, that's unusual. And there's a Sefer, which I'm sure we'll make reference to many more times throughout the year, but we'll make reference to him today also, so now is a good time to introduce him. The Sefer called Dor V. The Dor V, you can get it online at HebrewBooks.org. The Dor Revi was called that because he was the great-grandson of the Chassam Sofer. And he was the oldest great-grandson and the first one to be named after him. So his name was Moshe Shmuel Glasner. It was a very fascinating Talmud Chacham, had a very independent approach to things. And Rav Shechter refers to him very often. Because in the Sefer on Chulin, and for other reasons also, but in Sefer on Chulin, he has a couple of introductions, and they take you a very long time to work through, but they're worth knowing about. So he has an introduction to that Sefer where he talks about all his ideas about Torah Sheba'al Peh. So that's itself very interesting. And in Rav Shechter Shiurim on Torah Sheba'al Peh, which have been published in some formats and be published in a more formal format, Be'ez Hashem. So he often refers to the comments of the Dor Revi on the nature of Torah Sheba'al Peh, and the process of Torah Sheba'al Peh. Also, which we'll, God willing, refer to today, the Dor Revi after that, before he gets into the actual Sefer, so he talks about, he has a psicha to all of Hilchos Shechita, which is very long, but it's quite fascinating. So this actually combines both points, the Torah Sheba'al Peh and the Shechita, because he writes in this psicha that it's difficult to say that Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai was used to completely introduce a mitzvah. That it can be used to tell us how a mitzvah works. And it can be used to tell us details or other aspects. But a mitzvah b'chlal is harder to say that that could be all Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai. Happens to be Reb Chaim Brisker in his Sefer on the Rambam has one place where he distinguishes between different types of Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai, and he says there's Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai HaMefareshes, that explains details, and the Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai HaMechadeshes, that does introduce a new thing. But you have to figure out how far you would go with that. Would it make sense that a basic mitzvah would only be introduced through Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai and not in the text itself? That's a big discussion, and it's relevant also because there is a major machlokas in the Gemara in Chulin, which is on your additional makaros today. Hopefully you'll get to see it soon. That there is a machlokas in the Gemara, what exactly is going on here? Gemara in Chulin, and Daf Tazayin Amud Beis, and Tazayin Amud Aleph. So this is a very complex machlokas, and there is a major range among the Rishonim how to interpret the machlokas, and this is what the Dor Revi talks about a lot in his psicha. But just to give you a little bit of a sense of it, so what's something is switching now. They're going into Eretz Yisrael from the Midbar, And the Pesukim are saying, okay, from here on in, v'zavachta. So what is transitioning here? Sorry? No more man, it's also true. But the idea of Zvicha specifically, there's a machlokas in the Gemara what it's referring to. That according to Rabbi Shmuel, this is coming to allow what's known as Basar Taiva. So in that context, Basar Taiva is distinguished from Basar Chulin. I'm sorry, Basar Kachim. It's the same thing as Basar Chulin. It's distinguished from Basar Kachim. That we know they brought Karbanos in the Midbar. But maybe they were only allowed to eat meat in that context. They could eat a shlamim, they could eat from a korban. But stam, to have a steak because they wanted one, that was not permitted. And now it's being permitted. Now the Torah is saying, v'zavachta. Now the Gemara ultimately refines that a little bit because it doesn't mean that they couldn't eat meat in any other context because it only applies to animals that could have been brought as korbanos. So let's say if you have a chaya, you have a deer, they could have eaten that. And it's not necessarily a sweeping statement, but at least the animals that were roi l'akrava, they were not allowed to eat from those without a korban associated with it. And now it's becoming permitted. According to Rashi, in that Gemara, so this is the Isser of Shchutei Chutz that is now being redefined. That to eat Teshechta Korban, not for a Korban Roy animal, not for the purpose of a Korban, that was all included in the Isser that's described in Parshas Achrimos as Shchutei Chutz. While according to Rabbi Akiva, he says differently. And the Gemara explains that even though it didn't have to be maybe, but these are mutually exclusive positions, they are disagreeing completely, that according to Rabbi Akiva, it's coming to do something else. That in the Midbar, they could have eaten outside the context of the Karbanos. And there's a different point being addressed here. That in the Midbar, when they killed an animal, it didn't have to be done with Shechita. If it wasn't in the context of a korban, that could be done by what you call nechira. What is nechira? Nechira is essentially stabbing the animal in the same area in the simanim, but doesn't have the rules, the proper process of shechting. For Shechter, use the mushal. If you would take a saw and saw off the head of the animal, so it would be in the same place with the simanim, and the issue with the blood may also be accomplished in the same way, but the other details of Hilchos Shechita would not be fulfilled. So now they're asering Nechira, and only Shechita is going to allow the consumption of Basar Taiva. For sure, for Kachim, they'll need Shechita. But also for one's own meals, now Shechita is required. So that already is an interesting machlokas. And that also gives us some other elements of what this new mitzvah of Shechita is about. This mitzvah of Shechita here is being said at the end of the 40 years in the Midbar, right before they go into Eretz Yisrael. So what are the themes? It could be, like Gilad was saying, that there is some connection being drawn here between eating meat, Basar Taiva, and Basar Kachim, and that that's an important theme. It could be that going into Eretz Yisrael created a higher level of Kedusha, and the Rambam in Hilchos Shechita ultimately says that once upon a time, people, even humane people who don't want to eat Eber Menachai, they're going to kill the animal first, but they would kill it with Nechira. And then the Torah is Mitzvah Shechita. And that maybe reflects a higher level of refinement or sensitivity. Some Svarim draw the parallel, if you remember, you ever learned the Maseches Kedushin. So the Rambam, in the beginning of Hilchos Ishus, has what sounds like a similar phrasing regarding marriage, that it used to be. If somebody wanted to be with a woman, he would just take her home and have children. And the Torah came along and said, this is how you have to do it, with this kind of commitment beforehand. So maybe there's a parallel to be drawn here between the elevation of the Jews through Nesinas HaTorah in that context and in this context.
Rabbi's reading into Rabbi Akiva Shita? No?
So it sounds like Rabbi Akiva Shita is more consistent with that. Yeah, that essentially is saying that we are further refining your behavior towards how you eat Basar Taiva. And that's how the Rambam Paskin is like the Akiva Shita. Hi.
Was Nahira supposed to be like the least painful one?
So it doesn't sound like it. It doesn't sound like it has any particular rules other than that. But it does seem like it is focused on the at least getting the same area as far as the blood is concerned. And this also is a topic that is explained by the Dor Rivi in his introduction. It goes to a little bit what exactly the nature of Nechira is. He also points out, and others point out also, that then the source, what's the source for the Heter Nechira? Right? Part of his whole point is that if this Pasuk says specifically within Rashi, that Rashi and Chulin, that it's smoothest if we say that we don't have to rely on the Torah Shabbat Peh for the main concepts, that this Pasuk is coming to refer to something that was in Torah Shabbat Peh. So according to Rabbi Shmuel, that it is coming to allow something that wasn't allowed before. So that's what Rashi was saying. It's the Pasuk in Achrimos of Shchutei Chutz. That Shchutei Chutz said you can only shecht in the context of the Karbanos. And now this Pasuk is saying, okay, but once you go into the land and you're not necessarily near to the Mishkan, ironically it's the opposite of what we think about when we talk about Aliyah. Right now that you're coming into the land, so you're farther away from the Kedusha. So now we have to allow Basar Taiva outside that context. While if you say like Rabbi Akiva, you can say that the Torah says when it talks about Kisei Adam, it talks about other aspects, it talks about Korbanos, so it says V'shafach Esdamo, that the killing of the animal is referred to with an emphasis on spilling the blood. Nowadays we use that as a euphemism for killing people in any way. If you would poison somebody, we'd also call that Shvichus Damim. But the suggestion here is that it's more literal, and that in order to kill the animal, you should make sure to spill the blood. We're not equating spilling blood with killing. We're saying that that's a way of killing somebody, and that that is a way of killing an animal, and that that is a necessary way of doing it, as opposed to ways that don't involve spilling the blood to a maximal level. So shechita could be in that context. So either way, the way the Dor Rivi is emphasizing is that this is coming not purely in a context of Torah Shabbat Peh, but is coming to modify something we already have in Torah Shabbat Chzav. That we already know that Nechira was allowed because the standard was Shvichas Dam, and now the Torah is saying, but it's got to be Zvicha, not just Nechira, but it's got to be a very specific type of killing. Or according to Rabbi Shmuel, the Torah had said Shchutei Chutz, and therefore had banned all other shechting of carbon roi animals, and now it's saying, okay, now you can also shecht those animals just to eat. So one way or another, it is parallel. So there's a lot to say about this machlokas, a lot of very interesting things to say, but we don't have as much time as we'd like. But it does bring to the surface that there is a relationship to the korban concept and the shechitas chulin concept, and the nature of that relationship, there's a lot to speculate about. But what do you do with all the taiva here? Right. So what do you do with the ki sava nafshecha lechol basar, b'chol avas nafshecha techol basar, next pasuk, b'chol avas nafshecha? So here it's also, it's a little bit unusual, and I think we are going to have to continue this on Monday, but the whole idea here, taiva is now used in a more, say, positive, but not the worst sense, because normally we talk about taiva in almost every other context. We're railing against it, the problems of taiva and the like. But here, the Torah is essentially saying, follow your taiva, and the way the Gemara has it in the Chulin later on, and put this on the list, the Gemara quotes this pasuk to say that Limda Torah Derech Eretz, the Torah is teaching us how to be, that one should only eat meat l'teyavon, only according to his appetite. And it's the way the Rambam formulates it also in Halachas Deis, that it's as if we're saying, okay, taiva, that's legitimate, but not beyond. That there's something worse than taiva. It's interesting, if you want to look while you're, if you're, I know of family members who would go through the parsha with Rav Hirsch, Rav Shantra Nafal Hirsch, and his sefer on Chumash. So if you like looking at that sefer on the parsha when you're reading it, so you'll see that he explains there that the language he contrasts ava and other forms of the word taiva, that he says ava is a legitimate need, and isavu is a more illegitimate need. So I wonder, he doesn't go this far, but I think grammatically can maybe say that hisavu, the way the word is structured, is that it refers to making yourself believe you need something that you don't actually need. And that there is some degree here of where it's legitimate and where it's expected, but there's also that which is self-imposed and self-created, and that's what is held up as so negative and damaging, at least in that context. So there's actually a lot more to say about this, so we'll have to say a little bit more and then segue from there into the next sugya, which, to give you a heads up, I want to, we're going to try to fit all this back into the mission of what the Dinifah Kol Shochten is. So then we need to understand where a katan fits in. And also the next Mishnah, which is on your Gimel, is going to talk about Akum, which apparently is a whole different din. So to see how that all relates back to this, that's essentially what our next sugi is going to be, Shechitas Katan and Shechitas Akum. But just to quickly recap what we talked about today, so we tried to figure out how the Tamei HaMitzvos could tell us something about what is the nature of Shechita as a mitzvah or not a mitzvah, is it having inherent religious significance or not? And we considered a few things. We considered Tzar Bali Chaim is clearly a major theme. The assumption that Shechita is the least painful way for the animal to die is clearly an idea that pops up in a lot of places. And we mentioned the Ramban about how that's the idea of the bracha of Shechita is connected to Tzar Bali Chaim. It's an interesting idea. We talked about Rabbi Ephraim Meth's different suggestions of where voiding Achzarius is built into Hilchos Shechita. And then we talked about the getting rid of the dam as a major point, as the Sefer Achinuch mentions, and how that parallels other things. And then we considered the relationship to Kachim, which is indicated a number of ways. The very pasuk that introduces this whole concept of Zavachta Kasher Tzvisicha, so we got into the Ramban understanding that it's a reference to Kachim being extended here. The other interpretation that it's a reference to Torah Shebaal Peh giving us this message, and we talked about the Machlokas Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel about what is the message here of this pasuk, that something is changing when you're going into Eretz Yisrael. Is it like Rabbi Shmuel, that Basar Taiva was not permitted at all, and now it's going to be permitted within those animals that are really Lakrava? Or is it like Rabbi Akiva, that no, Basar Taiva was permitted, and in fact it was permitted more easily with Nechira, and now we're saying that Nechira is prohibited, and only through Shechita are we able to get to this. We also talked a little bit about the issue of mitzvah b'yosem b'shlucho, which has some very interesting implications that also ties into this question. So we will, Be'ez Hashem, next time we do Gemara, try to bring all this to a framework and move from that to the concepts of Shechitas Katan and Shechitas Akum. All right, to wish everyone a wonderful day.